Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, dancing through a homemaker. Hey, this one for the homemakers. This one.
Hey y'all, welcome to Patriarchy Country, where we are throwing back the curtain on what life is like when you're a member of the Patriarchal Wives Club. I do like to always stress that we are talking about a biblical patriarchy here. This is a patriarchy country where the sandwiches are always made and the women are allowed to have opinions. I'm Patriarchy Hannah, and today I am joined by our good friend and mutual Autumn, and we're going to be talking about going along with your husband on his mission and kingdom building with him, and I'm sure lots of other stuff because we never stay on topic. And first, I'm going to read us a verse. So this is going to be Genesis 1:26-31. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds and of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I've given every green plant for the earth. I've given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. So Autumn, welcome. Welcome to Patriarchy Country. How are you today?
I am doing good, a little tired, but that's to be expected with four kids and one who's not sleeping the best, but that's okay.
Yeah, and you were saying earlier it's like VBS week for you too. It seems to be VBS week for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of happy like they're not all just like stacked on top of each other, because sometimes it feels like, you know, every VBS is like the same week. And we don't, and like we were saying earlier, I don't do a ton of them. We let our kids do two with two churches we're kind of involved in, our church and the one where they do Awana's at. So it's nice that they didn't overlap and that we got a month apart between them. That was really nice.
Yeah. You don't think about how draining that stuff is until after it's done. You're like, "Oof, that was a rough week."
Yes. Yeah, definitely. But we are almost done. Tomorrow's the last day, and it's water day. So the kids are very excited about needing to bring towels and change of clothes and everything.
So before we get started, what is a recent king moment that your husband has had?
A recent king moment. Oh, I knew you were going to ask this. And I remember thinking, I need to think of something ahead of time. Oh, my goodness. Oh, he has several, and I'm trying to, oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank at the moment. So we kind of going along with the theme of like, what were we talking about, like coming on mission with your husband and stuff. He had, I want to say it's like most recent, it's like been a progression of things. So, but like, there's just been things as we've started this business that there's like no other way like it could have worked out except for God's timing and things. And just like, even again the other day, like he's like, "Well, like God made it work out again. Everything's coming together, and there's no way I could have done this." And he was just like, "Praise be to God, because there's," he's like, "if it was me," he's like, "I'd be probably curled up in a ball right now just going, I don't know how this is going to happen." And so when those little like things start to come together and he's able to see, it's like, it's not him doing this. Like, it has to be God blessing it. I always find that like for me, like a piece, like when I'm coming alongside of him and helping, like, okay, look, here's Trevor pointing out the faithfulness of God through everything. Cause he knows like I need that reminder of faithfulness when we're going through hard things. So that's probably been like one of the bigger moments lately, is when like certain things just hit, just like only God could have done the timing for it. And he was reminding me of the faithfulness of those things.
Oh, I love that. We love a humble king, and we love a, I don't even know what you, just a mindful king, you know?
Yeah, and one that realizes it is completely out of our control.
Yeah.
Like, and my husband is always great. He's always such, does such a good job of pointing back, going, this isn't in our control, it's in God's. And just, and then, but also remembering to look back and point out God's faithfulness. Like, and you see examples of that all through scriptures. Like, you know, David in the Psalms will do that a lot too. And, you know, in different Old Testament writers will talk about, like, here's what God did. Here is how he is faithful. We have no reason to doubt him. And I think because as I know, as a wife, at times I'm prone to worry about different things than he worries about. Like, I need him to be the head of our family who is reminding me, like, no, like, God is being faithful. He is being good. And look at all the things he's done for us. So it will be okay.
Yeah, most definitely. It is. So we'll get into, like, y'all's, like, specific mission. But I will say that, like, the adventurous wife life, it's not for everybody.
No.
When your husband. Oh,
it's not for the faint of heart by any means.
No. And it's like, it's no judgment to, like, I have a lot of friends. They just want their husbands to work regular, like, 9 to 5, come home, regular schedule. He has, like, PTO. He has, you know, health insurance. He has, like, you know, all these things, yeah. You know, I get it. That is not the life that we lead, but we do have health insurance. But, like, you know, that's just not, you know, Tony's never gonna, like, was never gonna be our life. And it's like, yeah, no, I, you know, I fully understand why you wouldn't want to be just, like, thrown to and fro in some ways.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Yes.
It takes
a strong man to be able to lead his wife through some of that too, because it can be a little tumultuous at times.
Yeah. And it really requires, like, I think to have a good marriage, you've got to have, like, a real level of trust, but you've really got to, like, be kind of in sync in a lot of ways, I think, or at least, like, have the same vision or understand the vision, mm-hmm. or I would just be so stressful, I think.
Oh, definitely. So, definitely.
So what is your husband's mission? Like, what are y'all, break it down for us. Like, what are y'all doing?
Okay, so I would say, I'll back it up just a little bit to give a little of my history of how, like, mm-hmm. some of this came more naturally to me because of how I was raised.
Yeah.
And that'll make a little more sense explaining, like, where we're at. So my dad always had this dream of, like, wanting to have a small farm, like, the kind of homesteading is what we would call it today, but that wasn't a trendy term back in the 90s when I was a kid. So he had always had this dream. So he bought some land, he moved us out of the city, and we started raising chickens and beef cows and some pigs. And my dad built up this business. And before I knew it, I was spending every other weekend to every weekend for 6 to 7 months out of the year butchering 1,000 chickens at a time. But, like, I had this example of my mother who was supporting my dad through this. Like, my parents grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. Like, not country farm people at all. My mom had never butchered a chicken before, had never done any of this. And here she is now, like, supporting my dad, coming alongside of him with his crazy dream of, like, starting this, you know, little mini farm where the main thing they cater to is families who wanted to order quality meat, but would order bulk amounts to kind of make it more affordable and easier for us on the processing mm-hmm. side, you know, not just going to the grocery store and getting your 2 chicken breasts for the week.
Yeah.
So having this example of watching my mom, like, dive in with my dad and go on mission with my dad in this way. And then my parents were homeschooled too. We homeschool and my parents homeschooled. So, like, I saw my mom follow, like, the calling to homeschool and then to do butchering chickens and raising beef cows. And they had 7 children. And just, I mean, it was very radical back in the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, we were at times the only homeschooling family in our church, you know, and we definitely felt like we stuck out because we did. Even though at that point we lived more in a traditional farming community, it was, people didn't butcher chickens. People didn't homeschool. They didn't have convictions around Christian education. It just wasn't as much of a thing then. And so kind of watching my parents walk that out, when I met Trevor, we met at Purdue. He immediately started talking to me about, like, I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I want to have my own business, and I want it, you know, and I kind of want to maybe go back and farm with my dad, but I also want to have this business on the side. So like when we first started dating, like he first started talking to me kind of about that. And so he kind of had this mission. And I think the important part there and all that was he didn't 100% know what it was going to look like, but he knew God had given him a desire for a reason, and he was just going to walk until it kind of made itself clear, until it kind of formed more of a plan. So I kind of, having watched the example of my mom, I was like, okay, well, that's great. I've lived that life. I can do it, and I'll support you any way I can. Like, I'm not scared by that, because I'd seen my parents successfully walk through it.
That's great. What a blessing. I definitely think that my childhood helped with, you know, ours, with kind of Tony's, you know, mission, and how it's always been a little like, not all over the place, but not the normal path, I think. Cause my childhood was so like bizarre. I don't know. So I just always had this, this attitude of like, yeah, we can make this work. Like, I can adapt to this. You know, my grandmother used to tell me, like, you can fight a bear that long. And so it's like, if it's in one of the kind of like not so great phases, it's like, okay, you can handle this for a minute. It's not going to stay this way. And, you know, I don't know. I just learned at an early age that I was like adaptable.
Oh, so. I totally agree. There's like seasons of crazy and intense. And I think it's Rachel Jankovic talks about in her book, Loving the Little Years. And while it applies to parenting, I think it can apply to like all seasons of life where you have that moment where it's just insanely busy and you know it's hard and you know it's only for a short amount of time. And like she would say, like they were so tired and worn out that even their eyeballs were sweaty.
Yeah.
And I always just love that. I'm like, oh, that... I feel that.
Relatable. Yeah.
I was like, I've never heard somebody explain it so succinctly. Like, oh, my eyeballs are sweaty. And I just love that line in her book.
Very relatable.
Yeah. So I guess, so where we are currently at, after my husband graduated, so we got married, he finished up his master's, and I was working at that time. We didn't have kids yet. And by God's grace, I managed to not take out like any, I only had a couple thousand dollars in student loans. I worked like 70, 80 hours a week in the summer. And I worked one to two jobs during the school year, just trying to minimize student debt. And my husband, he did get a couple scholarships, but he also just worked crazy hours too. And so we both graduated with like, I think we had $11,000 in student loans, and we paid that off the first year we were married. And we just, so that kind of was able to like, all right, we worked really hard. We knew how to work hard. Now, how can we, until like, how were we going to be able to start this business on our own campout? We weren't for sure. And a couple years ago, it started to finally come together in a way neither of us expected, and that we started an elderberry farm of all things. I was like, oh, here's elderberries. Okay, let's grow American elderberries. And originally my husband was thinking like soybean consulting, because his master's is in soybean physiology and ecology. And while he's not doing soybeans in that way at the moment, the physiology and ecology of the plants and the knowledge he has, he's able to apply to the elderberries. So like what he thought God was taking him in one way, he kind of flipped us and took us in a different direction.
Yeah,
so it is kind of cool to see that skill go either way.
It's really grown a lot in the last, like, just in the, I think we've been Twitter mutuals for a
couple years, you know, now,
year,
I think.
Yeah, a year or two now. And it's, I mean, you guys are like advertising on Brightheart now. So
we are. So yeah, it's up and running. Last year was our first harvest, and we're getting ready. Probably by next week, we will be, I have like a few berries that are ready, but they're not like, majority of the stuff is going to be coming in next week and being ready. But yeah, like the whole, okay, it's a season of crazy, like we're getting ready to start 6 weeks of like 15 hour days and crazy.
Yeah,
and that's that's okay. Like, I know there's an end date. I know we're going to survive. And yeah, I always think of the verse in Psalms. I think it's Psalm 118 or 119, where it talks about, unless the Lord builds the house, in vain its builder strives. And that's like been something that keeps going through my mind this whole time as we've been working through this, is like, God, please bless the work of our hands. Please bless our efforts. Please let you be glorified through this. And please don't let us be doing it in vain.
Yeah, please don't let all this be for nothing. Yeah.
Because I'm always like, but how do you know if you're the person doing it in vain or not? And that's where, as I said at the beginning, Trevor will point out where God's faithfulness has been all along the way. He's like, God has been faithful here, here, and here. We don't have to, you know, we don't have to believe we're doing this in vain when he's blessed all these different things that only he could have done. And so.
Well, and did you have some moments of like, you know, when Tony and I were engaged and then getting married, or got married, and he's really breaking down like his long-term vision. And then I finished grad school and he's like, we need to go to California. I have this like opportunity. And so I not finished grad school. I do grad school out there. And then we move somewhere else in California. And it was just a lot of moves on the chessboard. And I understood the overall vision, but I definitely had times where I was like, yeah, it's not that I don't believe in you, but I just don't know if I see how all of this is going to like come together. But like, I knew that I can look back and see how every move got us a step closer to where we are now. But at the time, sometimes there were times where I was like, oh man, this is just a lot. Like, I don't know.
Oh yeah, definitely. We definitely had that. Like, Trevor took his first job out of college, and there was a couple of times even within a year or two of being there, like, oh, well, you could take this other job and move here in the company, or you can move here. And we kept kind of going, well, I think we still need to be here. This doesn't look like it's the direction we're wanting to go long term. And then like a year or two later, we'd be like, oh, look, the mother company like absolved that, and those brands all went away, and we would have had to have moved again. So like, we're like, okay, like, God's protected us, you know, and different things. And then when my husband wanted to go back and farm with his dad and uncles, and when he was trying to talk with his dad about it, his dad's like, well, just come back, we'll find work for you. And he's like, but I have a wife and kids, like, I can't just come back. I need to know, like, what's the succession plan and things like that. And it just kind of, every time we would talk to his dad, it just wasn't working out. Like, he never seemed to have the information we needed, or hadn't talked to the other uncles about it. And like, looking back now, we see like, okay, Trevor is the oldest of all the cousins. The uncles weren't really ready to bring in the next generation, either physically, like they were still felt like they were doing okay physically, or even I think financially, they weren't quite ready for the next generation to come in. So it just like, but we didn't see that at the time. We were just kind of like, well, I don't get it. Why don't you want your son to come back and farm? You know, but now looking back, we can see like, oh, like God was kind of shutting that for a reason. Even though Trevor had thought, I'm going to come back and be the fifth generation on the farm. And so then as stuff just kind of kept happening, and then 2020 happened, and that was when more of this just kind of like solidified of like where God ended up pointing us and putting us. And like, but yeah, if you had asked us, what, we've been married 12 years now, 12 years ago, like, would we have been here doing this? No, like, I couldn't have seen it then. But like, yeah, looking back now, I see all the different moves, all the things he turned down, all the doors that God closed that put us where we are now.
One of my favorite things about being on Twitter is that I've been able to connect to other adventurous wives because even like in our church families and stuff, there was just a lot of like, what are y'all doing? Like, and sometimes my answer was like, you know, I don't know, but we're doing it, you know?
Yes. Yes. Twitter has been very, I know there's a lot of bad and there's a lot of ugly on Twitter, but definitely. I would say the same thing. I found it like, especially at a time when I was struggling to find like other like-minded Christian women who were valuing the same things. Like I when I found that niche in Twitter, it was so encouraging. Like, okay, I'm not crazy. I mean, I probably am crazy, but I'm not as crazy as I thought I was. I'm not as alone in my crazy as I thought I was. Like, there are other women who are trying to do the same thing with their husbands and with their families, who have similar biblical convictions. And it was just encouraging mm-hmm. to find that group of women.
Definitely. Because even, I mean, we don't have to get full hardcore into like the complementarian church. But when I found a lot of times when I would say like, well, this is my husband's mission. Like this is how he feels like God is calling him. A lot of the times the questions I would get back were like, okay, well, but how is God calling you?
Right. And I remember it was really interesting. Like I had a friend who was, she had been encouraging me, like, as I was starting my homeschooling journey. She was an older homeschooling mom, and we were in a complementarian church at the time, and the pastor's wife had come up to her and said, like, yes, your family should be a mission, but it shouldn't be your only mission. You should really put your kids in public school. And so, like telling the wife that because, you know, her mission at that point was homeschooling her kids, like, it was the wrong mission, and she needed to be doing other kids in the public school. And that was a very difficult way to navigate. Like when that was your church influence of like, but my husband and I feel like this is the mission we need to be on and this is how I'm supporting him. And they're like, no, you probably shouldn't be.
Yeah, it was a little difficult, you know, or they would say like, well, do you want to move? And it's like, well, I mean, that's kind of irrelevant at this point because like we are moving, you know?
Yeah, we had one time we almost took a job in Michigan. And my husband was like, well, how do you feel about moving? I said, it really doesn't matter how I feel about moving. Like, I'm going to go with you. I'm going to support you. And I'm going to do whatever you want to do. You need to make sure this is going to be the right fit for you and that this is where God has us going. And I will follow you. It doesn't matter if I feel like this is the right move at the moment or not.
Well, good for you. I had a couple of like brat moments for sure. One in particular, like after I went to grad school in Southern California and then he moved us to the Bay Area, and I was just not happy about it at all. I didn't want to move to California in the first place. I didn't want to go to grad school. And then like we were moving again, and I don't know, I did not have a good attitude about it for like a couple weeks. And he finally just had to say, like, you need to submit because you are just being like not a very pleasant person right now. Like,
I've definitely had moments where I've been told I need to submit my bad attitude. And it wasn't about moving, but there have been definitely a few other times where like Trevor has lovingly corrected me and told me like, you're out of line right now and you need to get it together. And I mean, he's always right. And I think I get angry when he tells me that because I know he's right. I know I'm out of line for my attitude. And then, you know, in my wonderful female way, I want to dig my heels in and be like, no, I'm going to be more defiant in my wrongness.
Right? Like, very rude of you to point out my bad behavior.
Like, actually, you don't need to point out my bad attitude. I know I have one right now.
Excuse me, I'm just trying to wallow right now, if you don't mind.
I need my self-pity moment. Come on. Yeah.
Well, and it was so funny because like that was at home, but like when I would get it from the ladies at church, who, not all of them, I think some of them had genuine concern. I think some of them just probably didn't have the best of intentions because it sometimes felt like they were trying to sort of stir up a little strife there. And, you know, I think as women, like sometimes we want to hear the gossip of like, how do you really feel about this? You know? And so I would dig my heels in with them and very much be like, no, I think it's great that we're moving. And then I would go home and I would be like, so like not happy about it, but I wasn't going to tell those women.
Like, well, and I think there's an important distinction too. Like, being open and honest with your husband and, you know, him not calling you to romance, but also not talking bad about him in public or not having his back in public either. Like, that is something that is very, very important to do. I grew up with my mom was such a good example of this. And she told us all the time, she's like, when you guys get married, you are not allowed to come to me and complain about your husband. Mm-hmm. I won't hear it. And like, she was very big about women are not to complain about their husbands publicly. You know, like, that is between you and your husband and you need to work it out, unless it's obviously like abuse or something. And then, you know, But again, that's not something you should just be flippant about. Like, you need to go to the right authorities in that case. But she's like, actual just complaining about your husband, that does not need to be happening. And I just had that drilled into me because I had family members who would just complain about their husbands all the time. And my mom, whenever we would leave those family gatherings, be like, do you see that? That's her being a thorn in her husband's side instead of a crown on her head, on his head. Like, do not be that kind of wife. And so just having that example too of like, yeah, maybe I thought some of my husband's ideas were crazy, but I'm not going to go around in public saying I think his ideas are crazy. I'm going to have his back. And I think that's a big difference too of like, when you're on mission with your husband, whether you, like you were saying, fully see it or not, is supporting them and not like tearing them down in front of others.
Yeah. And just not giving in to kind of like the gossip wheel. Because that is something that we fall into. So, and once you start verbalizing your unhappiness to other people, it really starts to manifest in like a whole other way.
Yeah. I remember my mom used to tell me, she's like, you can say 20 nice things about your husband, but you complain once or twice to somebody about your husband and that's all they're going to remember.
Yeah. So Tony's brothers are just like him. Like, literally, they are mostly interchangeable. And so my sisters-in-law, like, I have a general rule that, like, if I have a complaint or, like, yeah, I don't really have any complaints about him. Most of the stuff he does I find funny. But every once in a while, it's just like, oh, you know, I just need to, like, complain for just a second, even though I know I'm going to be laughing about it tomorrow. But it's like their husbands are the same. So it's like it's important that you have someone you can confide in, but you have to make sure that it's like a truly like a safe person for you to do that with in terms of like your marriage.
Yes.
You know, it can't just be like your whole group of like female friends, because that's just not, you know, it's just not a good idea. Everybody doesn't have to know like every feeling you have about everything.
Right. And I remember there was a couple times early on in my marriage, like I came to my mom and I said, look, I'm not trying to complain about Trevor. I need advice on how do I approach this as a wife, and tell me if I'm wrong here and if I need to be repenting to my husband. And that was helpful because like she knew what my expectations were. She knew I wasn't trying to make my husband look bad, but it was one of those things like, I'm newly married. I need advice from an older woman, but I also don't want it to be somebody who I'm trashing my husband to either. Like, help guide me in how I can better my marriage. And I think I only did that like 2 or 3 times. And then, you know, the longer you're married, the longer you can kind of figure things out with your spouse. Yeah. But there is that moment where you're like, you're saying you do need someone sometimes to go to, like, okay, just show me where I'm being an idiot here, or if I'm not being an idiot.
Right.
Like, am I blind? We have blind spots.
Yeah. I call it complaining with a purpose. It's like, yes, he did something that was annoying. I'm not just coming to trash my husband. I am trying to get some perspective on like what's going on, you know? So it's like, there's a purpose to it and not just me being like, rah.
Right. Yes, I agree.
So do the kids, like, I forget, how old are your kids?
Our oldest just turned 9 a couple of weeks ago. And then we have a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 1.5-year-old for now. And Lord willing, we're praying for a couple more, but we'll have to see if any more happen or not. So,
yeah. So do they help with the farming stuff, or?
What they can, they do. So right now, a lot of what's going on is like, so we put baby elderberry plants into the ground, but we don't want them to go into reproduction. Like, we don't want them bearing any fruit the first year. So we pick all the flowering heads off. So they are helping me pick out flower heads. If you get on, we have an Instagram page called the Kings Ridge Elderberries, and I don't like try to post a lot of pictures of the kids, but like there's one like kind of looking down I posted today of my 1.5-year-old who was helping me, air quotes there, helping me pull flowers off of the baby elderberry plants. I think he got more leaves than flowers, but you know, they are, I had all of the kids out there with me the other day and I got 8 rows picked in several hours. So they do help with some of that stuff. They help, with harvest. They're not the best pickers yet because they're, their attention to detail isn't quite there. So like you, there's a particular shade of color when we want to pick the berries, and they're not always the best at seeing that shade. They're like, oh, that's close enough, pick. No, that actually had like 3 or 4 more days on it. It needed to sit on the vine. So they kind of help sometimes more like running buckets back and forth or running the destemmer. So we definitely have them help where they can, but, and one of the bigger helps they've been right now is actually helping with the 1.5-year-old. Just because they can play with him and keep him happy and safe while I'm then able to work. And then actually they've become phenomenal cooks. So sometimes they're cooking for me while I'm harvesting.
I love that. I started letting the kids make lunch for each other every day, the kids that are home. And it's mostly my daughters who are 9 and 11 now, but they've been making like hot breakfast for their brothers for about two years now. Their brothers pay them to do it. They actually are making like bank, actually.
It's
pretty impressive. Cause I used to make 2 breakfasts and Tony was like, that's crazy. If they want to wake up at 5 a.m. and eat with me, that's fine. But you don't need to make another breakfast at 8 a.m. And it was like, okay, that makes sense. And so, yeah, they kind of like, you know, kind of got with their sisters. And now the girls have like a breakfast making business.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think there's such a skill at teaching kids at a young age to like cook and stuff. Like the other day or during planting, when we were planting earlier this spring, they're like, we're getting hungry for dinner. I said, okay, I get that, but I have to finish. I can't come in and cook dinner right now. They're like, well, can we just go cook dinner? I'm like, yes. They're like, well, what do you want us to make? I said, whatever you feel like making, go make dinner. And I came in and they had got green beans out and cooked green beans. They had done perfectly golden on all sides. They made 10 perfectly golden grilled cheese sandwiches, not burnt at all. They had even shredded the cheddar cheese for it and everything. And they had gotten applesauce out and they had like set the table and everything. Like they had made a whole dinner on their own. Like, and I was like, I usually burn at least 1 grilled cheese. Holy cow. They did better than I did.
Impressive. Yeah.
And there's been a few other times like, I'm like, just go. And so I even started incorporating a bit more of that in our homeschooling. Okay, on Fridays, here's a new recipe I want you to try. I'm not going to be in the kitchen to help you. Like if you need help finding an ingredient, I'll help you with that or making sure you have the right tool. But like for the most part, I'm staying out of the kitchen and this is your time to experiment and learn. And so I've been pushing that more with them.
I love that. I think we really like, we've gotten into this weird place where we oddly like infantilize kids way too long. Yes. But then in terms of like the world, they're being exposed to all this adult stuff that they don't need to be exposed to. But then the idea that you would let like your 8-year-old make a grilled cheese sandwich, there's so many people who would be like, oh my gosh, you know, and it's like, yeah, they're fine. Like, there's no reason why they can't do that, you know?
Oh, I am a firm believer of like, give your kids challenges harder than what they think they can do, and they will try to rise to it. And a lot of times they will succeed. I mean, and sometimes they don't, but a lot of times they will. And I'm always amazed at like, things I didn't think they were like that. I didn't think my 7-year-old was ready to make grilled cheese. And she made perfectly grilled, you know, done grilled cheese. And I was like, see, she was ready for that. And I think it's good for me as a mom to give them that freedom and to even push myself of like, the kitchen isn't my kitchen. It's their kitchen too. And if they want to be doing things, that's great. I need to make sure I have supplies around for them to learn and grow with too. And not be upset if some food is wasted in the process because this is how they learn.
Yeah. And it really changes the tone of like, this is dad's mission to, this is the family's mission. Like this is what the family is doing. And maybe you can't help pick the berries, but you can watch your little brother. You can make dinner. Like you are contributing to this, to like the family economy and the family mission just as much as everyone else.
Yes, you know? Exactly. And I think we live around a lot of Amish families. So it's, as we've gotten to know some of our Amish neighbors, it's been interesting to see like areas where they, like I see little 7-8-year-old boys driving their pony carts down the road. Like how many English families do you know would let their kids drive a pony cart down the road? But it's just they trust their children and they give them these responsibilities. And Trevor was just so encouraged with that. He's like, we need to be doing more things like that. We need to be like showing them, hey, we trust you and you have our trust until you break it.
Yeah.
You know, and like giving them those opportunities to come on with us and come on mission with us.
Yeah, we have a pretty similar attitude with a lot of things in our house. We're kind of, it's a little bit of a different situation because we got our kids like later, but it's a very similar attitude in general of like, we can either trust you or we can't, but this is the standard, you know? And so like, let's see what you do with that. And there's a line there. There's definitely things that you don't need to do that with, but you know, especially when it comes to like cooking, housework, you know, helping with the family mission. My sisters-in-law, their kids start washing their own sheets and towels when they're like five. They just like mark it on the washing machine, the buttons that they need to push, and they have a step stool. They don't do their clothes, but like,
well, that makes sense. There's probably still too many stains at that age.
Yeah.
I say, I definitely like when my kids were three, I think three is when I have them start folding laundry. Mm-hmm. And I cloth diaper when I'm not, I mean, if we're out and about or overnight, they're disposables, but so I cloth diaper a majority. So because of that, that's the first thing they learn to do is like, here's how you stack them. They need to be stacked straight and all going the right direction. So the three-year-olds always start with the cloth diapers. And then we move on to washcloths, and then we move on to underwear, and then we move on to shirts. And so by the time they're like six or seven, they can fold a whole load of laundry on their own. But I do kind of like stair step them into some of that. Now I have just finally started teaching my oldest two girls how to put laundry in the washing machine, because I kind of forgot that I should also start teaching them to wash the laundry, not just fold the laundry. Yeah. But I don't mind putting the laundry in. I just hate folding it. So Same. That was the one that I prioritized. I was like, you will help fold.
Yeah, I still do everybody's clothes. All my kids do their own sheets and towels, but I don't fold it. They're responsible for folding and putting away their own stuff. Cause I'm not folding for, we've got 10 people in the house now. Like, no way, Jose. I'm not doing all that.
So much. I'm actually at the point, I told my one daughter the other day, I'm like, I'm not sure I'm going to fold your clothes anymore because I fold them. You take them in here. You pretty much unfold everything to put in the drawers. So like, do I really need to fold your laundry anymore? Cause I feel like I'm wasting my time here.
Yeah. Just go in and just dump it in the drawer. It'll be fine.
Just yeah, you'll be good.
Have you ever seen those? Did you ever watch like Wife Swap?
I heard of the show. I think I've seen bits and pieces, mm-hmm. but my parents got saved after I was born, and then they went like hardcore, cut everything out of their lives for the longest time. I mean, like my dad cut the power cord on our television when I was growing up, and he had a quick connect that he spliced onto either end, and he took the power cord option with him in his briefcase to work.
Oh, wow.
So like we did not watch a lot of television growing up.
He was like, y'all gonna find something else to do.
He's like, you have 15 acres on our family farm and there are animals and there's homeschooling. And no, you're not watching television. And we did like no TV summers, which we largely do still here, like except for like family movie nights or stuff. Or like the other day it was raining all day and they're like, can we watch a show? I'm like, yeah. And here's four loads of laundry. Fold.
Yep.
But so I've heard of the show, but yeah, I have not seen that. I think that was more of a thing like when I was in my like high school, and yeah, I still wasn't really watching television then.
Probably. Yeah. So basically the premise of the show is you take two wives who live like very different lives and you switch them for a couple weeks. And the first week they live with like the family that they're staying with. And then the second week they get to implement some rules or like, you know, show the other family kind of how they live a little bit. And it's always these very extreme families.
Oh, know, yeah.
A lot of times. But there was a couple families on there who just had like a kitchen table full of laundry. That was where I was going with that. Is like they would just wash and dry the clothes and then everybody would just dig their clothes out of a pile on the kitchen table.
It's not the worst idea I've ever heard. I mean, maybe it's like, okay, I wash it. Here's it's on the kitchen table. Come find yours and put it away and fold it if you want it folded.
Yeah, I mean, we use our kitchen table, so that wouldn't work for. And I could never do it. But it's like it is tempting sometimes, too. Like,
yeah, I use my bed. I started my bed actually as it because of having little kids very fast together. I couldn't always just have the time to stop and fold a whole load of laundry. So I started folding it in my bedroom where then I could put it up on the bed where the toddlers couldn't crawl and reach to and destroy. And I could close the door and come back to it. So that was kind of why I ended up. And then my room's just kind of come the laundry hub of like where I fold. And like I have two totes currently in my room because I'm finishing up switching sizes out. I'm waiting for the last of the old size to get out of the laundry so I can finish packing that tote up and, you know, store it away. But that was, yeah, I kind of did something similar where I was like, well, I need a place to put it and I need it out of reach of little children. What do I do?
That's probably like pretty smart too, because you kind of have to finish before you can go to bed.
Yeah. And then that's the other thing. Like I would have to finish. I would have to get everything put away to get it off my bed at night. And so it did help me like finish things and get it done quicker. But then like that, I could close my bedroom door and then the little kids couldn't come in and, you know, undo all the work I had been doing. So.
Oh, and they love doing that.
Oh my goodness. And they don't even always like do it like on purpose. They're just being toddlers who have no like awareness of their situation or at all.
Right. Yeah. Of course they don't do it on purpose. It just is something that they love to do, even inadvertently. Like,
oh my goodness. Yes.
They love to be involved in things. So how is the mission going? Like, how are you feeling about the mission?
So it's going good. There's definitely things that I'm still, you know, nervous about, like, okay, this year, last year we only had a half acre we were harvesting, and this year we have 2.5 acres we're harvesting, and next year we're going to have 5.5 acres we're harvesting. So things like just getting enough help to help with harvest has been slightly difficult because a lot of people's kids don't want to work and parents don't want their kids to work. So like trying to find enough employees, which I know we're not the only one. That's like a nationwide problem right now, is finding people who want to work. So that's like been one thing. And I think we're doing okay. We have talked, we have some Amish families who are loaning us some of their kids a few days a week to come help us pick. So we're very grateful for that. And then the next thing I just keep praying is that, you know, God provides buyers in a market, and there are some places we can sell, but we're trying to cultivate some of our own markets too. So like you said, advertising on Bright Hearth, that was one of the reasons we're doing that, because we're not just selling frozen berries. We sell cold pressed elderberry juice for like, because Trevor's other thing we're researching developing is he wants to get into like wine and mead making. So we're currently like, me and my family are currently his test subjects on his new like recipes for wines and meads. We're so classy.
Nice.
He showed up to family Easter with a it was a deionized water jug that he had dumped all the water out of and filled it up with a gallon of homemade wine for my family to try. And I'm like, oh, we are classy people showing up in a plastic jug of wine. He's like, well, it's not in a box.
I love it.
So there's things like that. Like, he'd love to bring it to the wine and mead market. Eventually, there is some demand there. Selling elderberry syrup for, like cold and flu season, medicinal uses, allergies, things like that. So we're doing some of that. And just, you know, it's one step at a time. Just having, you know, having faith that God's going to provide people in that this will go off. And our long-term goal is eventually that this would become like his full-time job. We're obviously not there yet. But it's, you know, it's baby steps on the way. Like you said, we're working towards the goal and it's coming. But yeah, the next big thing is to survive harvest over the next, you know, month or so, and just get everything out as fast as we can, because the other problem is we raise our berries all natural. So we're not using, insecticides and things like that. So the problem is, like, if we don't get the berries out of the fields fast enough, then we have fruit fly issues that like to go crazy out there. And then there's, you know, blackbirds that want to come eat your berries and everything else. So, like, thinking of, like, when God cursed the land and stuff, and I'm like, I'm so grateful that he lifted some of the curse with Noah, and it's not as bad as it could have been.
Yeah, for real.
And, like, I'm just constantly reminded of the verse in Genesis 8:22, where God says, while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. And like, as we've not had like the most optimal growing seasons, this year or last year, like Trevor's constantly quoting that verse to me. He's like, God has said we will have seed time and we will have harvest. Like, and he's not going to fail. And I was like, yes, you're right. So that's yeah. kind of been our bigger struggle.
Oof, a lot of faith there. I don't know. I don't know much about elderberries. You mentioned that they are good for cold and flu season.
Yeah, so elderberries, so we grow American black elderberries. Most people are familiar with dried European berries, which is where I started out with. I didn't know there was a difference. There actually is a difference between American versus European. Americans are more stable. They have higher antioxidants level and they stay more stable at higher temperatures. So like when you're cooking them or things like that, they're also lower in, I'm going to say the word wrong and then Trevor will laugh at me, but I always say it wrong. They have a form of, all elderberries do, not just American, but American have a much lower form of, I want to say arsenic, but it's not arsenic. It's like a precursor to it. Oh, I can't remember what it's called now. I'm going to say arsenic and he can tell me I'm wrong later. But so it's deactivated by cooking. Like you just have to bring it up to temperature. But American elderberries have such a low amount, you can actually eat some of them raw and it won't affect you at all. And so that's why we have the American elderberries. And they are a native plant to our area. Like I've read stories of like Indians, Native American Indians, who would just like, they would protect their patches of elderberries from wild bears who would try to get in there and eat them because of their medicinal properties. So they're really high in antioxidants. And there's been some studies out of like Missouri and New Hampshire that show that if you drink as an adult, like a tablespoon of it a day, the way it binds to your cells, it makes it harder to get flu or colds. And if you do get it, you recover quicker from them and you don't usually have as severe of a case. And there's been some studies that show now that it can even help a little bit with COVID. Wait, are we allowed to say that word yet? I don't know. But
yeah, you can say it here. It's patriarchy. Okay.
Awesome. Like it can help with COVID a little bit, and that it there's actually some studies right now that's looking into like dementia and Alzheimer's even with elderberry. So it's just a really great plant. So like when we make our elderberry syrup, we use a bladder press. So we cold press the juice and then we only do a really low pasteurization. So that way we can keep the highest amount of antioxidants in there. And then some people make gummies with it. I would love to get into gummy making. I'm just not quite there yet with that, but we do elderberry syrup. My kids love it. When I first started the elderberry journey, what would that have been? Like four? No, not. Kasten is 5 and a half. So 5 years ago was when I started it. When Kasten, my third child, my son was born, he was hospitalized at 5 weeks old with bronchitis, which I don't know if you know what that is, but it's there's a different part of your bronchial tract that gets infected. But he was 5 weeks old. He was working so hard to breathe. He stopped eating, had dry diapers, like all the signs of distressed breathing. I'm very familiar with that now. And so by God's grace, like we got him, I got him to the hospital. They took care of him. He's fine now. But that next fall, it just seemed like my kids kept getting every single bug, every little thing they kept getting. And I was like, we got to find a way to support our immune systems more. And I found out about elderberry syrup. Told Trevor about it. He laughed at me and called it voodoo magic. And but he's like, well, it's good voodoo magic, so I'll drink it. And then I started finding the scientific articles behind it. And then my aunt was like, have you guys ever heard about elderberries? There's kind of a pretty big demand for American elderberries and not a lot of people grow them. And that's what kind of sent us down the course, was then Trevor had been reading all this other science. And then with his agronomic knowledge going, he's like, we can grow these here. We have the right soils, the right conditions. Like they're in the honeysuckle family and honeysuckle grows crazy around us. He's like, they would actually thrive really well here. And so it was kind of one of those things where like, where I was saying where he knew he wanted to start his own business. He wanted to be in farming and agriculture. That's his passion. He loves soils and plants. And he thought it was going to be helping farmers with soybeans, but instead it's kind of, or farming with his dad, but instead we're kind of starting our own thing. And he's already like trying to set everything up generationally of like, how can we hand this off to the kids? Like when we went to talk with the lawyer and the accountants about setting everything up, he's like, how can I do this in such a way that I can easily give this to my kids in the next generation? And it's just kind of cool to see how he's worked through all of that. But then, Yeah, so that's kind of where like the whole elderberry thing, it's a native plant to America, but the American ones are a lot better and more stable than the dried European ones. I mean, and you know this, I know this, anything that you can eat in more of its raw form or not processed form is going to be better for us. So what's going to be better, to cold press juice or a dried berry that you have to rehydrate and try to extract some of the benefits out of? Like, obviously the cold press would be better.
Yeah.
But that's like anything.
Yeah. I'm going to have to get some. So flu season can be kind of tricky for me because depending on where I'm, if I'm taking like my immunosuppressants or mm-hmm. where I am with like my medication cycle, like I, you know, a lot of times I kind of have to, I'm having to do it now too, because of the medical treatments that I'm doing, like kind of have to sort of quarantine myself from people, not the kids or like right. people that we see all the time, but like I haven't been able to go to church because I just can't be around like that many people. I can't afford to like get sick, so maybe that'll
help. Yeah, and the other thing is like I have so when I was 7 I was diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and I've had some immune issues before growing up, and one of the things that's great about elderberry is it's anti-inflammatory. They're naturally an anti-inflammatory fruit. So I'm always like, as somebody who's had to deal with inflammation issues my whole life, I'm like, oh, it's anti-inflammatory? Yes, please. Like anything that can help with inflammation, I'm all about.
Does it help with your arthritis?
I think I'm technically now in remission. I've had each of my knees drained over 20 times. I've had an ankle drained and an elbow drained. I lost count after 20. I can't even honestly tell you how many times I've had my knees drained. But one of the biggest things that helped me was when I stopped running when I was like 24. Mm-hmm. And I stopped running and I got really, I'd always really watched my weight and I had never really gotten heavy because like I knew, the doctor's always hard on me, like you have arthritis and it's in your knees and you need to keep your weight under control because that's going to be the best way that you're going to be mobile the longest in your life. And so once I quit running and I've been able to keep all of my weight down, even with kids was the hardest. Whenever I got pregnant, that is always hard. Like I have more pain issues. But I've noticed that as long as I exercise that aren't hard impact workouts and I do things like I'll drink some turmeric and I use the elderberry and I keep my weight down and I do things like that, like it noticed, like I haven't been on medicines in 15 years. And like I haven't had anything drained in, I guess it's been 15 years now since I made a lot of these lifestyle changes. So I'm a big advocate of like, if possible, do the diet, do the lifestyle changes to not have to be on meds and to be able to, you know, do that at all possible. And I've been very blessed that it's worked for me that way. That doesn't always work for everyone. But yeah, by God's grace, I've been able to manage my arthritis that way. And I think because it's been so long now, I am technically considered in remission. At this point.
Wow, praise God. That's awesome.
Yeah. They told me I probably wouldn't be because I was still 22 and having things drained. And then the one doctor told me, he goes, if you want to walk when you're old and you want to stop having issues, stop running. So whenever my friends are like, hey, you want to come do this fun run? I'm like, nope, got a doctor's note.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I love running. That would be sad. But the weight thing, I definitely like can relate to it because with my lupus, like the doctors have pretty much harped on like, you know, hey, if you don't keep your weight under control, it's going to be worse. Like it's going to be harder. It's going to be more stress on your joints. And I always like to remind people that, you know, I actually haven't birthed a child. And so, you know, if you struggle with that, don't ever compare yourself to me because that's not a fair comparison. Like, because I didn't, well, you know, I didn't go through all that. My body didn't change in all of those ways, you know, so that's just not a struggle. But somebody got really mad at me one time on Twitter for just saying that I wear the same size jeans that I wore in high school.
That's a dumb reason. There are plenty of women who've had babies and can get back to that size. So
well, yeah, but yeah, I mean, beyond that it was also like, yeah, just a stupid reason to be mad. But I mean, I tried to say like, hey, listen, you know, you've had three babies.
Right. Aww. My baby just woke up from his nap.
Oh, no problem. Do you need to go?
No, I'm okay. I'm just going to nurse him and he'll be happy now. So if you hear a couple of noises, it's just my baby.
No worries. No
worries. My baby, I mean 18-month-old toddler who's still like wants to nurse all the time.
Such a cutie. It was you who posted that picture of him hanging on the barn gate. Wasn't that you?
Yes. Yes. Yes, he's ridiculous and I love him. But yes, he's such a blessing to us.
Yeah. What a blessing.
Yeah, no, it is hard to lose the weight after kids. And I got on the scale today and I am back down to my high school pre-kids weight finally. But it's taken, I mean, I didn't know if I was ever going to quite get back to it because after my third, like the last 5 pounds just kept hanging on and hanging on. But I've learned some more things, like, and that's where I always advocate for people who are like, I just can't seem to lose weight. I'm like, keep researching, keep learning. Like, and I know like one of the big things, do you follow Summer Yeager on Twitter?
Yeah.
Maybe you do.
Mm-hmm.
She always talks about like protein, protein, protein. And like, and I started like looking into that more. And that has been one of the biggest things that helped me is upping my protein. Like, and helping me get some of the weight off was like just being full longer and having enough protein in my body. Like, I wasn't wanting to snack as much anymore and I wasn't taking in as much because of having all the nutrients my body needed more. I'm not saying I've done full carnivore by any means. I don't think I could ever do full carnivore. But like, there is such a big thing about like giving your body more of the nutrition it needs. And now I will say, my last two pregnancies, I did not gain a lot of weight. I gained 17 pounds with my third pregnancy and only 15 pounds with my fourth pregnancy. But my body does not like boys, and I was gestationally diabetic with just my boys.
So, oh wow.
You don't gain as much weight when you're gestationally diabetic and you have to cut out almost all carbs from your life, and it's miserable.
Oh wow.
So I gained significantly less weight with my boys than I did with my girls.
Well, and a lot of people don't think about it, but like when you're short, which I'm only 5'1", and you make me feel tall.
You're a giant compared to me.
I'm a giant compared to you.
Yes. It does hit you different when you're shorter.
Yeah, yeah. 5 pounds makes a huge difference on me.
Yeah. Like, oh, me too. I've had people tell me like, oh, you don't really look like you need to lose weight. I'm like, I understand that, but you're not me. And you don't know what my joints feel like. If I can lose the last 5 pounds, my body, and it's not because of a vanity thing. It's more of like, I know where my body's going to be able to survive longer and do better. Like, I know where my blood sugars are going to be happier, how my joints are going to feel. Like the less, like I was saying about the elderberries with inflammation, like having less inflammation in my body, like all of those things, there's a reason. Like some of that gets tied back to that. And it's, yeah, you have to diet yourself. You have to be okay with that, being hungry at times to reach some of those goals and just be like, you know, I've had enough to eat and I probably didn't eat enough of the right food. So I'm going to go drink a glass of water, fill my stomach up with that and just be okay right now.
Yeah. Like, well, and really paying attention to what you eat too.
Yeah. Yes.
It's because I mean, I can tell with me, like, you know, being sick now, like I'm not cooking as much. The kids are in Arkansas for the summer and he's making his debut. And
hello, Mr. Knox.
And so like we've been ordering a lot and it's like I can just tell the way I'm not gaining weight, but I can just tell that I don't feel as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know who is calling me. I have gotten 5 phone calls during this recording. So to anyone who's listening, I don't know how that's going to like sound on the other end, but apologies. I don't know what's up with that.
You're just so popular, Hannah.
I guess. My phone never rings like this.
It's probably your long lost uncle from Africa who wants to give you $1 million.
Oh my gosh, it really might be another long lost like sibling. I don't know if you've heard me talk about how like as an adult I've discovered like multiple siblings.
I don't know if I've seen that, but based on some of the stories you've told, I could believe it.
Yeah. Like my parents, I don't know. It's we're up to like, I think 30, there's 36 of us now.
Oh my word.
So yeah, I grew up knowing 14, but living like being close to maybe more like 9. But we've discovered like about 10 siblings since both my parents have passed away.
And are some of these like half siblings, I'm guessing?
Well, yeah, okay. Probably most of them. We really don't. So we don't even know the brothers and sisters that I grew up with. We're not even sure exactly who is like full sibling or half sibling. And we've just kind of decided we don't care.
But, I mean, that doesn't matter. They're siblings. Yeah.
Yeah. The ones that we like grow up with. So the one like we've grown up together and it's like, who cares? We went through all this together. But yeah, they're like half siblings, mostly from my dad, but my mom had a couple kids that she just like abandoned after she gave birth with the fathers too. So yeah, it's a good stuff. Yeah.
Wow. I'm always amazed when I hear about women doing that. Cause I just can't, I can't fathom doing that, you know, but then like, I'm also thankful when I hear about those women who like there was in Indiana, I think again, just the other day, there was another baby surrendered in one of those safe boxes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, well, yeah. Praise God for women who do that too. You know, like.
Yeah, I can't wrap my brain around a mother like abandoning her child, but praise God that she, you know, loved that child enough to like give birth at least and like put it somewhere safe as opposed to just going to the Planned Parenthood.
Oh yeah, that's definitely how I feel about it too.
Yeah, but it is pretty like mind-blowing. I don't know, my parents were I don't even know the word for it. Like, they were not the best, we'll say that.
Yeah,
a bit degenerate, but yeah, definitely just like having kids all over the place, it's really weird. But
I love it though.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. It's always interesting to see like what we have in common, you know, because we didn't even know about each other until, you know, 3 months ago or whatever. Right. And so there's certain things, certain attitudes that
you're like, oh, I know that attitude.
Yeah. It's like, okay, it's cool that you feel that way because like that seems to be like a family trait. You know, so
yeah, it's those like epigenetic ends of things that sometimes come out that we don't always even, yeah, fully like, sorry, I get very interested in like the epigenetics of things, because we do have an adopted child, but, yeah, and so like I'm always like intrigued by like you're genetically not mine, but you know, like, wow, the epigenetics thing is real. Like there's the environment, there's the like bonding with you of things that it's just like, you are a Perkins. Like there is no other way you can be anything else but that, even though there's like some distance there too. And so I'm always fascinated when I read stuff about epigenetics and stuff.
Yeah. My kids, you can definitely tell that they are our children. The older kids, like it takes a minute, but like the girls, we've had them since 2 and 4, and it's like, yeah, no, these are definitely Hannah's daughters.
Yeah. So. People are always amazed when I say which one of my children is the adopted one, and they're like, no, you're making that up. And I'm like, no, I'm really not, actually.
It's funny how that works, right?
But I love that. I'm like, I love the fact that you don't know until I actually have to say something. I mean, obviously if my children had a different skin color, like that would, you know, that's usually a little more obvious. But like, mm-hmm. But even then, like I've had friends who have adopted and their skin color is very different. But like to look at them, I'm like their mannerisms, how they talk, how they act. Like, I'm like, I know you're not the biological father, but I would swear that was your biological child by the way they're acting and talking. Like there's that whole, they even mm-hmm. take on the look of their parents, which is the whole married couples end up kind of looking like each other thing. That's like where, yeah, it's the whole epigenetic factor that I always just find so fascinating where you're like, yeah, I know who your parents are, or yep. I know who you're married to.
Absolutely. Like, it's definitely very the whole, like, nature versus nurture thing. thing.
Yes.
Very, very interesting. Because some of our kids do have relationships with like older siblings, like older biological siblings. And so it's so funny when, you know, the biological siblings are here too, we'll invite them over for, you know, like for Sunday lunch or whatever, and to see how like us they are, but then also all these little ways that they're so much like this other person, you know? And it's like, I don't know, adoption is so cool. It's such a cool, like, mixing of two families.
And especially, I feel like once you understand, like, the theology behind adoption, like, it just, I feel like it makes just, it's even more beautiful once you understand, like, how, like, what it means to be adopted into Christ, too. Like,
yeah,
it's just, I think it just brings such a new level of, like, understanding and gratitude than for what Christ and God has done for us and has by adopting us. And yeah,
well, and that makes a lot of sense as to why, like, a lot of people on the left are very anti-adoption.
Oh, yeah.
Which I, you know, that's always been like such a weird thing to me, to like hear. It's like, what do you want? Should I have left them at the group home? Like, I don't know what you're pushing for here. But before we wrap up, do you have any kind of words of wisdom for maybe some of the women who are listening who are, you know, maybe new wives or, you know, struggling with, you know, the whole accompanying your husband on their mission?
Yeah. So I would say men are very much, and I know you're probably just like words of affirmation is a big thing for men. I mean, I think it's a big thing for women, but especially for men when they're trying to lead and provide for a family. So even if you're not, like, Hannah and I have both said this episode, there are times we couldn't fully see where it was going. Like, don't discourage them or tear them down in that. Like, encourage them, pray for them, like, look for opportunities to be the crown on his head and not the thorn on his side or in his side. Like, just try to encourage him in any way he can. And I think it was Brian and Lexi Sauve who were talking about an episode of Bright Hearth of, like, you know, not everything is going to always be a success. There's going to be a flop, but if he's trying and something flops, don't drag him through the mud for that. Don't make him feel bad. Don't bring up his failures. Because obviously as a wife, I don't want my failures brought up when I've done things that have, you know, failed, but we're not going to know unless we try. So I would say encourage your husband in any way you can. Be his biggest cheerleader. Tell him you believe in him. And just pray for him a lot in that area and just pray for your own heart, but also go to him and have very open conversations. Like I've done several times with Trevor and I'd be like, look, I like with our example of the elderberries, I was like, I believe you can grow the best elderberries ever. I have no doubt of your skills or your ability and your knowledge of crops and plants and soils. I was like, but here's the area I'm nervous about with starting this, you know, I was like, and I need you to understand that this is where I'm at. And I need you to be aware of it. So like, if I have moments that you can help me through this and you can hold me accountable in these areas. And if I have those panic moments, you can rein me in and just, you know, understand this is where I'm coming from. And so have those open and honest conversations with your husband and don't not to discourage him, but so that he knows and you're not blindsiding him, you know, and having those moments where you puke out everything on him.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely perfect. The perfect advice. Is there anything else you wanted to share with us?
I would say there is such a blessing in building a business with your husband. It's also super, super sanctifying. So if you don't want to have sin revealed in your life, don't do it. Like, I don't know. Oh my goodness. How many times, like, we've been working on something and I'm like, oh, there's a sin I need to deal with. Oh, there's my bad attitude showing its head again. Oh, there's another opportunity to just like try and kill that sin. So if you're not wanting your sin exposed, I mean, yeah, there's one way to not have it exposed is don't get on mission with your husband, because it's definitely one of the more we've had very several sanctifying moments in our marriage, and this is probably the second hardest one, after the first hardest one being was we lost everything in a house fire when I was 9 months pregnant with our second child. So that was a super really hard one. And then starting a business with your husband is the next probably hardest one, like a challenge I've been on in sanctification period. But it is really good for that. And I'm glad that God gives us those trials to walk through and to have our sin revealed. But it's not always pretty either. And to just remember, as your sin is being revealed, so is some of your husband's sin. And you both are going to have to work through those together.
Yes. And learn to be okay with things not being perfect or settled. Yes. Like, which is very sanctifying for me personally, because I don't like it. But, you know, just always remember, like, there's a season for everything.
I would also say, I know one of the big pieces of a marriage advice out there is, like, don't go to bed angry. Sometimes you just need to go to bed angry. You're tired. You're hungry. Nothing is going to be working well by talking any later at this point. You both just need to go to bed and sleep. And then get up in the morning and work on it then. And usually by then, after I've slept, we both have had enough time to go, I'm sorry, I was being an idiot, I was wrong, will you please forgive me? But there's sometimes just staying up too late, in my experience, has not actually, it's made things worse, and it's not made things better.
I fully agree with that. Like, you should probably, before you go to bed, get to a point where you don't want to, like, you know, commit sin against him. Violent sin, but like, but you know, beyond that, it's like, it's just, there is a time sometimes when like it's not fruitful to keep going over and over it. And a lot of times when you wake up, like in the morning, things really do look different.
Yes, you just have clarity. And I think almost every argument that we've gone to bed on angry and said, we'll talk about this in the morning, like we wake up going, that was dumb. Why were we fighting? I'm sorry, please forgive me. Like, it's just an immediate mood change, and we're able to see, like, here's where I was being dumb here. And like, I'll say, here's where I'm being dumb. And he'll say, here's where I'm being dumb. Please forgive me. Here's the areas we need to work on. It's just like, you get some space and clarity. And I really think there is something about like when we're tired, we don't think clearly. We don't make wise decisions, and we let our emotions run too high. So I'm a big, I, after 12 years of marriage, I'm a big proponent of like, we don't fight past like 10 o'clock at night. We go to bed and we'll pick it up in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, no good comes from trying to force conversations when you're tired. It's just not good.
No, insults and dumb decisions get made after 10 o'clock at
100%.
Night.
100%. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Autumn. It was really great to be able to sit down and chat with you. Yeah. For anybody who might have been following my tweets, or I don't know, I can't remember if I tweeted about it or not, actually. But Autumn and I were actually supposed to record last week, and I got caught up with my kids watching Project Veritas and John Doyle videos and talking about abortion. So I was like, yeah, sorry.
Hey, it happens. Sometimes. And you know what? Yeah. Honestly, that was more of a priority than us recording, was you needed to have good conversations like that.
No, for sure. And that's what I love so much about my like Twitter moms is like, y'all, it's like, I know that y'all are totally like, understand that, like, yeah, no, it's not that I don't value your time, but this was actually like a very important like moment, you know, that I got to have like this conversation. So that just has to be the priority at the time, you know.
Priorities matter, and knowing what needs to be the next thing. And sometimes what you thought was going to be the next thing isn't it. It's something else instead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's such a little thing, but like, I'll just literally never put anything over my job as a mother. And that includes like this podcast. So like, if my kid wants to talk to me, but I'm supposed to like record, then I'm just like, not going to record, you know? So
that's the way it should be.
Absolutely. Well, before we go, I will just remind our listeners that all of the thoughts and opinions expressed here belong to the person who spoke them and their husband. But as with everything in patriarchy country, this episode has been husband approved, so you can direct any of your complaints or misgivings straight to the man himself. Tony is at What's Good It's T on Twitter, and he joined specifically for this reason. So feel free to let him know that you don't approve of something, and he will promptly let you know that both he and Autumn's husband listened to this episode before we put it out, and he runs his house as he sees fit. So thanks, guys, and until next time. Okay, let me pause this. All right, so. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, dancing through a homemaker. Hey, this one for the homemakers. 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 This one for the homemakers.